everyone, and welcome. This is Penelope Whitney, Communications Director with the Labor Management Partnership. Today's presentation has been created to give managers like you, who supervise LMP employees, an introduction to what's new in the three-year national agreement. We'd also like to welcome the managers and supervisors who are involved in crafting the 2015 agreement and spent many days and nights taking part in bargaining. Thanks to all of you for joining us today. Allow me to introduce our presenters. We have Dennis Dabney, Senior Vice President, National Labor Relations and Office of Labor Management Partnership.
Good morning.
And we have Deanna Dudley, Executive Director, National Labor Relations Strategy.
Hello. Thanks, Penelope.
And Henry Diaz, Executive Director, National Labor Relations Operations.
Hello, everyone. Good morning.
Today's agenda covers many topics, from bargaining goals to key dates and deliverables, wages and benefits, operations, how we prepare for work of the future, and workplace safety. We know you have questions, so we will be stopping at a few designated points throughout the discussion to take those questions, as well as at the end of the presentation. To submit your question now, please type it into the chat box on your screen. We're going to answer as many as time permits. Another important point, this webcast is being recorded. Starting Monday, you can listen to it at the website bargaining2015.org/webcast, what's new in the national agreement. One more time, that URL is bargaining2015.org/webcast, what's new in the national agreement. You can download slides from this presentation and other information at that site, and we're going to repeat this at the end of the session. So if you don't write it down now, you'll have a chance to at the end of this presentation. So now, Dennis Dabney, please take it away.
Thank you, Penelope, and I'd also like to thank everyone for joining us for this webcast. I've often said that this new national agreement actually feels like that, giving birth to a child. You have to nurture it, and we're in the nurturing process through ratification. We'll be completed with that by September 23rd. We are 98% ratified at this point. So we went into the 2015 bargaining knowing that we had a strong 2012 agreement to work from. Our goal was to make improvements and focus on a few issues, not make major changes or come out with a number of recommendations for the 2015 agreement. We also wanted to minimize our future liabilities, most importantly in the area of retiree health benefits. It was also very important to move toward more operational flexibility. We wanted to make sure the organization and the workforce is ready for the change, especially in the areas of care delivery and technology. Our goal is to ensure that we are investing in our people so they are prepared for the future. It was also important for KP to continue our plan to have the healthiest and safest workforce in healthcare, which also helps reduce costs. Next slide, please. As we have done in all national agreements, we use an interest-based bargaining process. To make sure interest from throughout the organization was considered, we had 150 union and management members that made up the CIC, the Common Issues Committee, who represented all regions at all levels throughout the organization. Here's how first-time national bargaining team member Casper described the experience. You can read the quote on the screen yourselves, but he basically loved the process, and he believes negotiating this way is in the best interest of everyone. I think Casper's comments echo what most of the bargaining members throughout thought about interest-based process. Next slide, please. So the 2015 National Agreement takes effect October 1st. It's a three-year agreement, and it expires on September 30th. 2018. The local collective bargaining agreements have all been extended by 3 years where ratified, and so they will just roll over 3 years from their current expiration date. Key dates included in this agreement, as you all know, the wage and benefit increases take effect 10/1/15. We do have some joint guidelines that we are developing related to a flu vaccination. That's going to take place 10-1-15. This is now a requirement of the contract, and Deanna Dudley will be talking about that in a few minutes. We've updated the UBT targets and the assessment process for UBTs. We'll be doing that effective 1-1-16. We also have changes to the Total Health Incentive Plan that will take effect 1-1-16. Next slide, please. So this is the most important thing to people, and that's wages. So you can see that the coalition employees in Northern and Southern California will be getting a 3% wage increase each year for the first 2 years and a 4% increase in the third year. The ROC regions will receive a 2% increase each year plus an additional 1% wage increase at the end of the third year. So why don't we see if anyone has any questions at this point, Penelope?
Great, thank you, Dennis. We do have one about the wage increases with the ROCs. Someone writes, why did the ROCs get lower wage increases than California?
Good question. And typically that's related to a number of factors. Chief in those factors are the market area wages for classifications in our ROCs, and then most importantly, the margins that Kaiser has in the ROCs. Our margins aren't as high in the ROCs as they are in the California region. So those are the two most important factors to go into determining what kind of wage increases will be in the region.
Great, and let me make one note for everyone, the listeners on the call right now. We would really like to hear your questions, so please enter those in the chat function, and we'll be able to take those certain points throughout today's presentation. Thanks.
Okay, next slide. While our employees still have outstanding benefits, we have started to address the active medical expenses by increasing emergency room copays throughout the program. Copays for emergency room visits now in California will be $50, and in the Northwest, $50. Other regions will be $100. We had a lot of conversation during the bargaining session about emergency room copays, emergency room visits, especially in those areas where we contract with hospitals for emergency rooms. So this is an outcome of those conversations. We've also improved the dental benefits, so we've increased the maximum dental to $1,500. We've increased the lifetime ortho to $1,500. And we've also provided a minimum life insurance of $50,000 for all coalition employees. Next slide, please. So again, in the talking points, we said that one of our chief objectives was to address our post-retiree obligations, the liabilities that we have going forward. We addressed them in the 2012 agreement, knowing that we're going to have to go back and revisit the subject in the 2015 agreement. I am happy to report that we have come up with a solution that I say is finalized. It finally addresses every aspect of the post-retiree medical. So we were able to reduce the liabilities associated with retiree medical benefits while maintaining a post-retirement benefit structure that's excellent. To make this work, we will be transitioning from the current plan into the KP Senior Advantage plan that we offer to all KP Medicare members. This reduces future liabilities that will carry on our books in the future. We are creating a health reimbursement account that retirees can use to cover most of their out-of-pocket expenses. As some of you are aware, we already have some HRA accounts out there for people where you can put your unused sick bank time, some of your unused sick bank times in those banks. So it'll be another HRA to accompany that. The transition starts for the ROC employees who retire after 1-1-17, and in California, the new plan takes effect no sooner than 2028. The 2015 national agreement established a new permanent structure for post-retiree medical benefits going forward. So let's stop here again and see if there's any additional questions around that.
Thanks, Dennis. Yeah, we're getting quite a few. Karen Mosqueda wants to find out, what changes are being made to the total health assessment?
talk about that on the next slide when we talk about total health.
Okay.
I thought there might be some questions about post-retiree medical.
Yes, and there's one of those too. We've got a question about retiree medical. Now, why is this a good strategy for the company?
Well, I think so overall it addresses the liability for the company, so it reduces our future liability and our current expense. At the same time, it provides employees with a great benefit. While where most employers are eliminating post-retiree medical, we're still providing an excellent benefit. And then in some cases, like in the Rock regions, they were actually paying more under the old benefit plan for retiree medical. This plan will also save a number of those employees money. So overall, it's a great plan for everyone.
Great. Thanks, Dennis.
I'd like to hand it off to Deanna.
Thanks, Dennis. For 2015, we organized bargaining by subgroups, and we had three of those. One subgroup was operational and service excellence and partnership, and that group looked at operational, service, and partnership issues. We had work of the future, and work of the future group covered workforce planning, development, and redeployment issues. The third group focused on total health and workplace safety issues. On your screen, for those of you who are watching the actual slides, you'll see that we had Ron Groper, our Senior Vice President and Area Manager for the San Francisco area, participate in bargaining this year. And his quote actually really sums up one of the issues that we spent quite a bit of time focusing on in the operational and service excellence group. And that dealt with operational flexibility. And for those of you who can't actually see the slide, basically what Ron said was that day-to-day changes in our medical centers are a fact of life, and we are working together to be able to respond to those changes while ensuring the quality of care that we provide. So, continuing on the topic of operational flexibility, as I mentioned, that was a topic that was very important to our managers. And we believe that we have developed an approach going forward that will address some of the challenges that they have had in the past while creating an ability to spread some practices across our organization, which is also very important. We recognize that there was no one-size-fits-all approach as it relates to operational flexibility. We have had fantastic flexibility language in the national agreement, but the challenge for our managers has been, how do you operationalize that language? And so what we agreed to in 2015 was that we will have the LMP councils in each region appoint a labor and management representatives to address flexibility-related issues in the region. And those groups will do a couple of things. One, they're going to review and recommend approaches that have worked in one facility or service area and see if they can share that across, which is basically spread. And that's something we've been wanting to do for quite a while because it helps the organization at large. And the other thing that they're going to focus on is identifying recommendations that will help us achieve flexibility as well as work-life balance, because we do believe that those two kind of go hand in hand, and it's a better overall approach for our organization at large. The labor and management representatives will be held accountable for this approach of operationalizing flexibility, in that they will have to report their progress annually to the Executive LMP Council and seek assistance from the LMP leadership if they need it. So we just wanted to highlight that we did really focus our time and our discussion on operational flexibility, and we are excited about the approach that we have put in place. As we look at UBTs, and I'm waiting so that the slides will catch up to what we are. Okay, so as we look at UBTs, we also had a strong focus on UBTs. And as many of you know, they are instrumental in helping us move forward with the mission of the organization. We focused our time and discussions on three basic components as it relates to UBTs. One is building stronger UBTs. The other is looking at ways to be more consistent and have accountability. And the third is that we did focus on the future of UBTs. What will it look like going forward? As it relates to building stronger UBTs, we developed new and updated some
criteria. At the tone, please record.
For the teams to be rated as high performing. So for example, level 4 and level 5 teams now have to show that they are spreading or adopting successful practices. And as I mentioned before, even with operational flexibility, we believe that it's very important that we spend more energy spreading successful practices throughout our organization. That's been an area that we haven't been as successful as we would have liked in the past, and so going forward, we have more emphasis on that. With regard to the member-facing UBT departments, they will have to get input with the help of their sponsor from the voice of their customers. So that's just an example of some of the new and updated criteria. Since we know that we have placed some additional demands on the teams, we recalibrated the annual performance targets for UBTs, and the chart that you see on the slide sets out those new targets through the year 2019. The second area I talked about as it relates to UBTs is finding a way to have us have more consistency and accountability. And so what this includes is we will have face-to-face assessments of the teams to ensure accurate ratings. And we will also, by the fourth quarter of 2016, develop scorecards. And these scorecards will assess all aspects of the partnership at the regional and facility level. Importantly, we also extended partnership structure to shared services and national functions. As many of you already know, we have employees who are union coalition represented workers in shared services and national functions. They just did not have the structures in place before, and going forward, we've now extended the structures to those areas. And with regard to the future of UBTs, we plan to launch in January 2017 Level 6 UBTs. And what Level 6 will look like is Level 6 will include some cross-departmental teams as well as cross-functional UBT teams. And these teams will allow us to have a greater reach than the teams do today. So that is a little bit about what the discussions entailed and what we achieved in bargaining as it relates to UBTs. Now looking at the issue dispute resolution process, we also made some enhancements and some gains in this area, which is also, I would say, important to our employees, as well as all of you listening today, in that we have put in place, we believe, an approach that will help resolve issues as they arise faster than they may have been resolved in the past, so that everybody can get back to our main focus, which is providing care for our members and our patients. So specifically, what we've done is that we've streamlined the dispute resolution process as it relates to issues that arise under Section 1 of the National Agreement, and that's privileges and obligations of partnership. So for example, when a disagreement arises at the facility level, the parties involved will meet directly at that facility level, and they will use interest-based problem solving to try and resolve the issue. They will have 30 days to do this, and if it can't be resolved within 30 days, then the matter will be referred to the local LMP council. If it's not resolved there, then it moves forward to the regional council and so on. Each level will have 30 days to resolve the issue. And if they don't, they provide a summary of what the matter is and move it forward. If we get to the place, and mind you, we do have a number of levels, so we do hope that we will not be getting to the place where the issue still remains unresolved, it will be referred to the national level, and a panel will be put in place, and that panel will include a neutral as well as a representative of the coalition and management. So we are, like I said, really excited about this because our focus is to address issues at the area where they occur, make sure that we are maintaining the relationship between the parties and having open dialogue, and allowing people to get back to the matter of providing care for our patients and our members. And so resolving issues as expeditiously as possible is really in everyone's best interest. And with that, we will now look at work of the future, and I will turn it over to Henry unless we have questions.
Actually, Deanna, this is Penelope. We do have quite a few questions about flexibility. People are writing in just wanting to know if you can define it a little bit more. For example, can you give an example of what is a flexibility issue? And it looks like Dennis is going to take that.
Thank you, Penelope. Again, another very good question. So prior to bargaining, what we did is we went out to all the regions and we asked the operations, labor relations, human resource people, what is flexibility to you in your region? And needless to say, we had a number of different definitions of what flexibility is. So it is not the same in every region. It typically revolves around staffing, moving people from one department, one building, having the right people at the right place at the right time to do the right function, making sure that people are working to the top of scope of their classifications. And when you look at our solution around flexibility, the solution was crafted understanding that it's different everywhere. So our solution is centered around each local LMP council will meet to talk about what is flexibility in that area, in that region, and how do we institute, operationalize flexibility in that area. So it's different everywhere.
All right. Thanks, Dennis. Henry, please take over at this point.
All right. Thanks, Penelope. Hello again, everyone. As Deanna mentioned, we're going to cover now the high level of the work of the future subgroup. And in this agreement, we're going to build and make improvements through our mutual efforts to prepare our workforce to meet the future needs of our members and patients. And you've been looking at this slide for a few minutes now. Zeth, our Director of Workforce Planning in Southern California and Hawaii, kind of sums it up by saying to prepare our workforce for the future, we have to align staffing with regard to current care delivery, transformation, innovation, and new technologies. We know that there are changes that are coming to healthcare. In fact, we know the future is already here and that these will affect everyone in the organization. And we are committed through this agreement to doing that in a thoughtful, committed way in partnership with our labor partners. Next slide. First, and importantly, we have made a commitment, we as an organization made a commitment to more resources for worker training in the form of increased financial commitment. You'll see here on the slide a very succinct summary of that financial commitment and additional monies to the Ben Hudnall and SEIU-UHW Joint Employer Education Funds over the course of the agreement, an additional 33%. An additional 1%, excuse me, $1 million to each fund to directly address training for employees going through redeployment. And thirdly, an increase in tuition reimbursement for coalition member employees of up to $3,000 per year. Go to the next slide. And so here are some of the highlights. I think the top line summarizes our general efforts here, and that is to remove barriers to career development and mobility for our coalition member staff. First of all, our regions are going to work with our labor partners to identify training opportunities, really to focus on meeting the minimal experience requirements that our positions have so that they can help them qualify at some point for those minimum experiences. Along with that, we are going to apply more focus. I've skipped a bullet, as you might know. We're going to apply more focus and monitoring to our preceptor programs and mentorships and set goals and develop criteria for those plans. In a separate context, we're going to work within each region to develop more consistent and transparent redeployment process for those instances where we have to look at new technology or changes in delivery and where redeployment may result. And finally, to develop a joint system to capture and better understand core competencies, skills in education, et cetera, so that we can then build a communication strategy for our workforce and help them work toward and train for career development. So now let's look at some of the highlights from our total health and safety subgroup. This is a quote from Kathy Gerwig, and she pretty much sums it up. And I think this area, as well as the total health and workplace safety, are a significant piece of the agreement, and really should be looked at as part of a long-term business strategy for staff to model total health and help us as an organization generate a competitive advantage. And here are some of the highlights. Go to the next slide. First of all, the Total Health Incentive Plan. This is of course on folks' minds. The 2015 plan is in place and will remain unchanged. So what we're looking at is 2016 and beyond. And we will first have there will be a joint team that will review our current plan to help provide some more specifics criteria for the 2016 plan and going further. So there will be a plan, and there are some adjustments to the current plan as you see on this slide. There will be a gate, an initial gate for screenings. Biometric screenings will be the first gate, and these will include BMI, A1C, blood pressure, certain cancer screenings, and smoking. After that gate is, and that payout is $150. The second gate is will be based on the collective outcomes of each of those health measures within each region, and so more to come on that detail as we get into 2016. I think there was a question earlier about the total health assessment, and that will no longer be a part of the plan as of 2016. However, it does remain in the plan for 2015. Let's go to the next slide. Here are some of the highlights to place additional emphasis on the reduction of workplace injuries and violence. In partnership with our labor partners, we are going to assess current workplace safety investments and provide guidelines for regional and local implementation. We're going to develop an enterprise-wide system to track and follow up on safety hazards, to jointly prepare for emergencies. We were able to do that in a number of instances in the last year, but this is a broader approach to that. To create a national labor management partnership team to conduct a program-wide analysis to improve workplace violence prevention. To evaluate our disability management program to keep people working. And importantly, with respect to community benefit, to engage employees, coalition member employees, and our labor partners in total health in the community and integrate them into community benefit projects and volunteer work at the local and regional level. So with that, I will hand it back over to Deanna.
So, Deanna, hey, I'm going to interrupt you for just one second there. We're getting a few more questions for people about the presentation. Will it be available? And I'd just like to say, yes, it will be available, and we will have a URL on the very last slide of this presentation. In addition, I want to remind everyone listening in right now that we would like to take your questions. So please enter them into your chat box now. We're getting close to the end of the presentation, so we really want to hear what you all have to say in a few minutes from now. So with that little interruption, please go ahead, Deanna.
Thanks, Penelope. Another area that was addressed in the total health and workplace safety subgroup is flu prevention. And for the last several years, we have worked really hard to expand our voluntary campaign as it relates to having employees receive a flu vaccination. We have definitely improved in the numbers of employees who received a voluntary flu vaccination, but we were unable to get consistency across all of our regions. And so since this is such an area that is important to our members and the organization, we did reach an agreement with the coalition that coalition employees who work in patient care areas will receive a flu vaccination or wear a mask. And we will develop guidelines for implementing this mandatory condition by October 1st. I have received some questions with regard to right now, because some of our regions have actually already received the flu vaccination and they are starting to provide flu vaccinations. So what do you do prior to October 1st? And what we are encouraging our regions to do is to continue with the voluntary efforts that you've always been doing for the last several years. We want our employees vaccinated and or wearing a mask. And so we encourage you to continue doing what you've been doing, and we will be sending out the guidelines once management and the coalition representatives who are working on this matter develop those guidelines. And so if we don't have any questions, I'm going to turn it back over to Dennis to let us know where we go from here.
We do have a question about joint planning for emergencies. This is a health and safety sort of question. Dan wants to know, are you referring to things like Ebola, or is it more like MCIs?
Well, I think that something on the scale of the Ebola concern, it may not be the norm going forward, but I think that is a subject as to that the parties should talk about locally as to what do they need to or want to work on together. I think from my experience working with the Ebola event, our regions tend to work with their labor partners and dialogue around these things in one fashion or another. And so they should certainly continue to do that. I was very impressed by the fact that so much of the work, I was working with groups on a national level, but I was very impressed by the fact that while we were doing that, so many of our regions were already engaged with their labor partners and talking to them about precautions, procedures, and activities related to it. So I think that the local dialogue is probably the way that's going to get resolved.
All right. Thanks for that, and thanks for elaborating on the flu preparation, Deanna. And actually, there's one more question coming up about how are you defining flu season? When is flu season?
So the flu season, we actually work with the public health officers in our regions to determine when to activate the flu vaccination and or mask, and so it's not just Kaiser arbitrarily setting a flu season, it's us working with the public health officers in the regions where we have operations and conduct business. So that will be determined basically once we get information from the public health officers.
So thanks, Deanna and Henry, for your assistance in this presentation. At this point, we need everyone on the webcast to know and understand the new agreement. We will have copies of it available within 90 days. We should have it printed and out for distribution. The 2015 National Agreement expands our capacity to provide affordable, quality care to our members and patients and helps us to improve the health of the communities in which we serve. The agreement strengthens our partnership in unit-based teams. That gives Kaiser a competitive edge. The 2015 National Agreement is a win-win for Kaiser Permanente and positions us well for the future. As Elizabeth says here in this slide, We can impact all of KP. We have the chance to make a lasting change. That's what we're here to do. Last slide. KP and the Labor Management Partnership provides resources and support. You can learn more about the partnership at lmppartnership.org. This webcast is being recorded, and you will be able to access this and the national agreement at the Bargaining 2015 site listed above. If you, like a member of the labor relations team, to talk to you or you have additional questions, please send an email to laurie.spohn@kp.org. Last time during the 2012 agreement, we made ourselves available. So if you want us to come out, talk to your team, talk to you, talk to your staff, we're more than willing to do that to cover what's in the national agreement and how it pertains to you in particular in your region. If you have questions specific to your region, you can also call your regional HR or labor relations leader. Thank you for listening, and now we will take a few final questions.
Thank you, Dennis, Deanna, and Henry. We do have quite a few questions, and if those of you on the phone haven't had a chance to submit yours, please type those in now. So we have one question, this may be one for Dennis, from Tanya. Will the post-retiree medical benefits also apply to management or non-represented employees in the Rock region?
That's an interesting question that we have been getting ever since we completed the national agreement, and not only from non-represented employees, but needless to say, some of the other unions that we have made agreements with around post-retirement medical have been asking the same question. And the answer goes something like this. Once this contract is 100% ratified, we've got that 2% to go, we will look at this agreement and what's in it around post-retirement medical and some of the other benefits like dental and life insurance, tuition reimbursement. We will look at those things and determine how do those things apply to not only the non-represented population, are there going to be any changes, should there be any changes. A lot of those benefits are different, and just making sure that, you know, they all provide a great benefit to those segments of the population. So I would say more to come after ratification.
Great. Thanks, Dennis. Another question from Ann Jordan. Can you expand on the workplace safety component? A pretty broad question, but maybe there's something you can say specifically about what's new in this agreement about workplace safety, perhaps as it pertains to violence in the workplace. I know that there are a lot of new issues related to that in this contract.
So to that, I would say Kathy Gerwig and a group of people worked on workplace safety, and they introduced a number of improvements, recommendations. They are very specific. They will be outlined in the agreement. Most of it centers around how do we help improve the safety in our operations, which also includes how do we utilize EBTs to help us in the area of safety, how do we work together with labor around safety in the different regions, and how do we work together around workplace violence and workplace violence prevention. So most of that's going to be at a regional level and even at a facility level, again, utilizing unit-based teams as much as possible.
Thanks, Dennis. And a couple questions for Deanna about the flu. The first one is, do patient care areas related to the flu vaccinations apply to the hospital, or will it include the MOB?
So, as I mentioned before, we are actually working with the coalition to develop guidelines. So I can tell you our thinking on the matter is that as it relates to management, we don't designate one particular building as patient care or not, because, for example, I'm here in the Ordway building. If I were to have to go to the Oakland Medical Center for a day to work and I'm around patients, I would think one would want me to have the vaccination. And so we try and stay away from just building by building or medical office building in that nature. And we actually really talk about, are we seeing patients? Are patients there? And we designate literally areas, and we try and define that. That will be our approach as we start the discussions with the coalition.
Great, thanks. And the next question is, are coalition employees aware that flu shots are mandatory starting this year?
So what I can tell you is, just as we are here today talking to our managers, the coalition communicates to their members as well. We have 98% ratification, and so we assume that they are communicating the terms of the new agreement. So I would suspect that if they don't know, they will know soon, but many of them probably already know. But I do know that the coalition is going through their own communication channels as it relates to letting members know. And after we have full ratification, we will have joint communications as well.
Great. Thanks, Deanna. So sounds like a logistical question. Can you repeat the status of ratification? So when is ratification going to be taking place? And what's the current ratification status? Is that something you can share?
Sure. So at this point, 98% of the coalition unions have ratified the contract. There's about two or three locals yet to ratify. They have been waiting on the actual contract language before they begin the ratification process. They now have that contract language. Those couple of units should be ratified by September 23rd.
Great, thanks. And
We have exactly which unions have ratified. So if you're interested in a particular union, you can send an email to that laurispoon@kp.org mailbox, and we can tell you exactly what unions have ratified.
Okay. We've got a question from John. What's the recommendation for sharing this information with our staff? I'm not sure if that's specifically about the flu or the whole agreement in general, but what are your recommendations about how they let people know?
So our recommendations are, after ratification, you can use this webcast, for example. You can invite us out. You can invite your local labor relations people out. I would suggest that you make sure you have a labor relations expert with you when you have those discussions with your staff. And again, we are available, along with the regions, are available to assist you with communicating. Most of the frontline employees, again, as Deanna has said, have been involved in the ratification process, so they know what's in it. But if you're talking about your frontline supervisors or managers, we will be more than happy to come out and participate in any educational endeavors.
All right. We're going to be wrapping up in just a couple minutes. We've got a few final questions we're going to be able to take. And one of them was about funding people. You mentioned funding for redeployment. Are you anticipating layoffs? And someone else wants to know, will there be any job layoffs?
So we are not anticipating any layoffs, but as we've seen from the last 3 or 4 years, things occur. So it's more like changes in the work environment require the workforce to be redeployed in different ways. What we wanted to do with changing the way we do redeployments is, instead of regions having to worry about, are there enough funds there to retrain employees, to move employees where you need them to be, we decided we would do it from a more of a national perspective. So that's why we moved how we focus on redeployments, and we think it's allowed regions to have more funds available to, again, retrain, reeducate, and redeploy employees, not lay them off, but redeploy. Again, Kaiser's growing. And so long as we grow, and so long as there's new technology introduced into our environment, there's going to be a need to redeploy people where appropriate.
Great. Thanks for that question, Dennis. Well, that just about wraps up our presentation today. Thank you so much for all of you for listening in and providing so many excellent questions. We really appreciate getting them from you and the opportunity to answer them. And don't forget, you know, if you would like to request a visit by National Labor Relations leaders, you can contact Lori Spoon. Her email address is there on the screen right now. In addition, remember that you can listen to this webcast recording or let people know who weren't able to attend the presentation today. The webcast recording will be online as of next Monday. That's Monday. You can listen to this webcast recording. That website will also have other materials about the national agreement, as does bargaining2015.org in general and the LNpartnership.org website. So again, Dennis has one statement he'd like to make before we wrap up.
Yeah, so we just got a question in from Connie Linsky in Southern California, and she's asking a question about per diem. And there was an agreement around per diem and changing people from part-time to full-time. That is going to be administered through your local labor relations professionals. We have already sent them that agreement. We're talking about how to roll that out in each region. So there will be more detail from your actual region around that question, Connie. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thanks to Dennis Dabney, Deanna Dudley, and Henry Diaz. And all the best to all of you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening.